Good morning, everyone. It is Monday, December 18th, 2017, and the Green Bay Packers have lost to the Carolina Panthers 31-24. It was the loss that, in almost all certainty, ends their season. A playoff berth at 9-7 is unlikely given the strength of the NFC this year. It was, of course, the first game back for Aaron Rodgers from a broken collarbone. And here to discuss all of it with me is Tom Silverstein. As always, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
Well, I don't know where to start with this one, so I guess we can just sort of look at Rodgers, I guess. And what did you think? Okay, starting at the beginning, what did you think he could reasonably do, or what type of rust would there be going into this game?
Well, I thought he would be reasonably accurate, reasonably effective. I thought he could have like a 220-yard game. I thought they would try to run the ball quite a bit, take a little bit of pressure off him, then work the passing game off the run game. And I expected some rust. I expected some missed throws, and that's kind of what you saw.
Yeah, you know, right from the beginning, the very first drive, they got that quick first down to Davante Adams, but then they had a couple plays where the timing was off, the throws were either a little high or a little short or a little behind, and it sort of continued, really, throughout the entire game from that point. Rodgers finished 26 of 45 for 290 yards, three touchdowns, but he had three interceptions, the first time that's happened since November of 2009. And a passer rating of 71. Did you get the sense, watching it there, like I did on television, that the running game, it seemed like they sort of abandoned it after about the second quarter?
Yeah, and I asked Rodgers about that too. And there was some legitimacy to what he said. It didn't really excuse the lack of running game in the first half. But in the second half, Carolina pretty much just lined seven or eight guys up at the line of scrimmage, usually about seven, sometimes six, and made it almost impossible to run. But they were able to, they would drop back some guys on the snap. They would rush some guys. Usually they were rushing about five, sometimes six. And they had a good plan on how to block that in the passing game, but they had no plan on how to run against it. And they pretty much chose not to run against it. So what you saw early in the second quarter with Aaron Jones, they couldn't ever replicate in the third and fourth quarters. And some of that had to do with how Carolina went after him. But I don't know if there was ever a great adjustment in the run game, and I'll have to look at it again to see if they could have run it, but they felt like it was not the smartest thing to run against that defense.
Yeah, and so Jamal Williams had the most carries with 10, but only averaged 3 yards a carry, and then Aaron Jones had a little bit more success. He actually looked pretty good on the carries that he had. Three carries for 47 yards, and he ripped off two in a row that were pretty big gains right through the middle of the field. In terms of, you know, the receiving core and trying to get a rhythm with Rodgers, did anything surprise you in terms of the personnel groupings that they used or the way that they tried to throw the ball downfield?
No, nothing did. Nothing surprised me at all. The most noticeable thing was that Davante Adams remained the number one receiver. People made a lot of deal about, oh, Jordy Nelson is going to catch a lot of balls now, and Cobb is. But Adams is still their best receiver, and Rodgers obviously understood that and threw the ball to him. And their passing game really wasn't completely stopped until Adams got hurt. And then, you know, once he got hurt, they were sort of in trouble because they could not get any big plays until they got to Richard Rodgers on that second-to-last drive. And what you saw was that Nelson and Cobb were ineffective. I mean, I went through the completions and incompletions, the throws, targets, everything to those two guys after Adams went out. And I forgot what the numbers were, but it was like something like 7 of 13 for like 55 yards and an interception. I mean, that's what your top, your two $10 million receivers can manage after Adams goes out. So I thought that spoke a lot about where they are at the receiver position.
No question. I mean, you look at the targets and receptions. Cobb was targeted 14 times, only caught 7, 50%. That's a really low number. Jordy was targeted 6 times and caught 3, again, 50%. And, you know, the thing that I sort of noticed is that it appears Davante Adams is the only one that can get quick separation near the line of scrimmage. I mean, he's so good with his footwork, and we've talked about that at times dating back to training camp. But Jordy's not beating anybody quickly off the line of scrimmage, and Cobb isn't either. And then Geronimo actually did on the play that he ended up fumbling. But I just almost feel like if they want to throw the ball in rhythm and throw it fast, those two guys aren't really getting open as much anymore.
No, they can't really get open on their own. I mean, Nelson can get open. You know, he was kind of open on the deep ball that Rodgers underthrew and was picked off. Cobb had some opportunities where the balls were not quite perfectly thrown, but I thought he still could have hung on to a couple of those. You know, guy has to make a big catch. He's got to break a tackle. You know, you see with Adams, when he gets the ball out in the flat or in a hitch, you know, he's a threat to get 8-9 yards and maybe more. And I felt like Cobb was not a threat to get any yards. He had the one really nice long pass. But other than that, I thought they really didn't have much going, much of a threat once Adams went out.
So the play where Adams goes out is one that, you know, immediately sparked reaction on social media for being a helmet-to-helmet hit on the illegal blindside block by Thomas Davis after Rodgers throws an interception. And so I was reading the article by our colleague Ryan Wood that sort of focused on the Adams situation, and I thought it was interesting that there was one player in the Packers locker room that said, yeah, it's unfortunate that Adams got hurt, but that's part of the game. I don't think that should come out of football, and that was Ahmad Brooks. And so I guess, as you've seen the game sort of go more and more toward player safety over the 20-plus years you've covered it, what do you make of plays like that, that, you know, in the past and dating back to, you know, the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, those were the plays that guys looked for. You looked for players on those opportunities to try and get a shot that you wouldn't ordinarily get.
Yeah, well, I never thought it was a good hit when Warren Sapp hit Chad Clifton and almost ruined his career. And then, you know, but that was a legal hit, and they've changed the rules on those blindside hits. And really, under the rules, if that guy is facing his own end zone and he goes up high, then that's illegal. That's the rule. And that's exactly what he did. Now, if he had gotten his shoulder into his shoulder, you know, then it might have been a little bit different. But he went too high. And, you know, I don't know. It's, you know, back in the day, that was a legal hit. But there's no question it's damaging. And if you're trying to prevent concussions, you know, then that has to be outlawed. And you could tell Davis felt bad about it. I don't think he wanted to hit Adams in the head. But, you know, Davis is not a bad guy. He was the Walter Payton Man of the Year. I think there's this thought process that if you're on defense, to go headhunting for offense, because, you know, those guys are all, that's the only time that, you know, you get to hit somebody or block somebody. So, I don't know. I think he should have been thrown out of the game, but that's not necessarily the rule right now, so it's really at the official's discretion.
The one thing that I'm curious about how it plays out over the next couple of weeks and into free agency is, you know, Davante Adams has had a number of concussions now. That's two this season because he had the first one against the Bears in September when he took another helmet-to-helmet hit from Danny Trevathan. That's when he had to spend the night in the hospital. And then he had another one previously. So he's had three in the last 14 months alone. Obviously, Packers fans are familiar with what happened to Sam Shields, the concussions cutting his career short. What do you think about Adams' future, given the number of concussions he has and the fact that it's a contract year?
Well, I will say this about, you know, yeah, it's bad. It's definitely something where, you know, they may have to consider just shutting him down for the year. I don't know how serious of a concussion it was. He came back from the other one pretty amazingly in less than a week.
Same with last year.
Yeah, and he's not... the one thing about it is his concussions have come from, I mean, legitimate big-time hits. It's not like, you know, with Shields, it was starting to be, you know, anytime he went for a tackle, he wound up with a concussion. And with Adams, it's taken, I mean, tremendous licks. I don't know, you know, I'm not a neurologist or anything, but I wonder if he really hasn't shown the signs of a guy who has a concussion at the drop of a hat, you know. It's more been, you know, these catastrophic hits that have caused them.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And, you know, Rodgers said after the game that everybody's brain responds differently. And as you mentioned, even going back to last year, that was when he suffered a concussion on a Sunday. The Packers had a Thursday night game against the Bears, and he played on a short week and had like 12 or 13 catches that game because that was when they didn't have any running backs, and that was when they had to use Adams in the backfield a little bit. And then earlier this season, as you mentioned, they play the Bears again on a Thursday night, and he's there the following week, which was, what, 10 days later. And shows no signs of it throughout the season. I guess, I don't know, maybe it's just me being a little bit cautious, but I would, if I was him, I wouldn't, well, if I was him, maybe I would want to play the rest of the year, but if I'm people in the organization, maybe I don't want him to play the rest of the year and risk getting another one. You know, so let's talk about that in general. What do the Packers do now in terms of how hard they try, how hard or how much they risk veteran players, how much they look at younger players now that the playoffs are essentially gone?
Well, you know, we should go over what their chances are. They're obviously not good, but, you know, there's still this slim possibility. Some things went their way today. Atlanta, I believe, would have to lose all three of its final games.
That's correct.
For them to have a chance. So if Atlanta loses tomorrow night or tonight against Tampa Bay, then you know, they still technically have something to play for. I don't know where Dallas fits into this. I think they would have to lose at least once more, right?
Correct. So basically, Seattle has to lose one of its last two games against Dallas or Arizona. And the Cowboys have to lose one of their last three games. They, of course, played the Sunday night game against Oakland. They're then at home against Seattle, and then they play at Philadelphia. In that situation, you know, the Packers could get in at 9-7 because they would have the tiebreaker over those two teams, and they would also have the tiebreaker over the Lions. Our colleague Pete Doherty and I went through it, and it goes all the way to the fifth tiebreaker if both the Lions and Packers finish at 9-7. So I guess the biggest one is Rodgers. If you're Ted Thompson, what do you do with Rodgers?
I think it sends a bad message if you don't play him. He took hits. He responded to it fine. I'm sure he's going to be sore, and it'll take a little while to get the soreness out. But he took some pretty good hits. Got slammed to the turf, and nothing happened. And I just think if you're sending a message to your team that everybody's equal, how do you just sit him down and not play him? I don't know. Then you got to sit down Adams. Then, you know, maybe anybody's got an injury of any type, you have to sit down. So I think they should play him. just until, you know, until they're eliminated.
Yeah, I agree. And again, you know, by tomorrow morning, this could all be irrelevant, because if the Falcons win and they're 10-point favorites against Tampa, then it doesn't matter and they're officially out. And in that situation, then maybe you rest guys and throw some young players in there and things like that. In terms of, you know, how this game played out for the Packers defense, you know, I was scrolling through social media. You were on the blog, I'm sure. And it was, again, everyone wants this to be, you know, the end of Dom Capers, the end of this defensive era. What did you make of the way the defense tried to play on Sunday? And then obviously the results were negative, but what did you think of how it played out?
As usual, I thought that the offense dictated to the defense how the game was going to go, and right from the start. And it's almost never that the Packers are able to dictate to the offense how the offense is going to play. And so Carolina was always a step ahead. Early on, they got McCaffrey matched up in one-on-one situations, and the Packers were helpless. So once they, after that, then they started going to some zone stuff, and we all know how bad they are in zone. They had a couple of moments where they made some stops. Carolina helped them out a little bit, but they also played a little bit of good defense. Demarius Randall, once again, had a really nice game. But you just saw that without cornerbacks, they can't play. They just cannot play without cornerbacks in their defense. And, you know, from Morgan Burnett and Clinton Dix, I thought were once again absent, if not, you know, detriments to the defense. They did nothing to really, and I thought there were some plays to be made. So I don't know. Why I understand why they didn't play the undrafted rookie corners, but you know, in the end, it didn't matter because they lost anyways. So maybe they would have had a chance playing someone, some kind of corner who could have run with McCaffrey or could have run with Greg Olsen. But they didn't. And Olsen killed him as usual, and McCaffrey killed him. And they did about as good a job on Cam Newton as you can do, holding him from scrambling and running and read option. I thought they did a really good job on the read option. But they can't cover anybody.
You know, it's I have no idea what the league average is in terms of blown coverages, mistakes, where communication is an issue and guys are left wide open. But I can think of half a dozen this season where the Packers just have somebody that has turned completely loose. And I'm sure it happens to other teams too. But I just feel like the communication this whole season, whether it was only having 10 guys on the field or letting Joe Mixon walk, or Giovanni Bernard walk in for that touchdown when he's alone on the left side. And then in this past game, you had Greg Olsen alone for a 30-yard touchdown, and you had McCaffrey alone in the flat when nobody went and covered him. And I don't know if it's guys having issues or guys not understanding the scheme, but I thought, again, you know, for all the positive traits that Josh Jones brings, I think pretty much all season he's been a liability in coverage, and I thought that was again the case. Clinton Dix, you mentioned as well. And, you know, look, Josh Hawkins gave up some catches, but for an undrafted guy that played at East Carolina and was a walk-on at East Carolina, I didn't think he was that horrible, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he's inexperienced, and that's really the problem, is that they're playing with guys who are, you know, they're undrafted for a reason. They go undrafted because most people think they're not NFL prospects, and once in a while you do get a good player out of an undrafted prospect, but the Packers rely on those guys way too much. And, you know, you have to go back to Geronimo Allison. That's what he is, too. He's an undrafted free agent. And he, you know, did not make the play that a real NFL player makes at the end there. If that's Davante Adams, I highly doubt that guy wrenches the ball out of his arms. you know, or Jordy Nelson. But that's just the way it is when you're playing with subpar talent. And I think we've come to realize that that's what they're playing with in many positions. And, you know, injuries are a factor. There's no question. But the teams that I think are the best are the ones that when an injury happens, they react to it. And they try to find someone who can help instead of just bringing guys up from the practice squad. And that's, I think, something that has to change in order for the Packers to be competitive.
You know, you mentioned Allison having that fumble late in the game when the Packers had a chance to tie it. And obviously I wasn't in the locker room because I wasn't able to travel. So what was the mood like, you know, for Allison in particular and just the team in general? And then second of all, what did you think of the onside kick by Crosby? I thought that was a tremendous kick. And Marwin Evans, I thought, did a really nice job, you know, hopping on a ball that certainly could have bounced out of bounds.
Yeah. I was not around Allison. I know there were a lot of reporters around him. But I did not get a chance to talk to him. Ryan did. And so I don't really know exactly what his mood was like. I talked to Crosby about the onside kick, and it's pretty funny, you know. He just wanted it to skid on the ground. And he was worried about it popping up, bouncing up, and being easy to catch. And he did really get it to... It bounced and it went right to McCaffrey, which is not exactly what you want to happen. You want, you know, you kind of want it to bounce off one of those guys' legs who's blocking or something like that. And it sort of just scooted right through there, but McCaffrey whiffed on, well, he didn't whiff, but he just, you know, he flubbed it. And the Packers, to their credit, got in there and Marwin Evans was all over it right away. And so it was a really good kick. He gave his guys a chance. And from that point on, I thought they had a very good chance of going in to score and sending it to overtime. But, you know, ultimately when your best player's out and nobody else is doing much, you know, you're susceptible to one of your guys making a mistake.
You know, I don't know what the Panthers do on a day-to-day basis because I don't cover them, but I was shocked that McCaffrey was in that position. I mean, I know the guy's got great hands. I know he's been tremendous all year long, but I thought for sure they'd have a guy like Olsen or Funchess or somebody that's just not a rookie, you know, and has a little bit of a larger body, so you think that they could maybe have a bigger radius in terms of grabbing the ball if it's loose. I don't know. Maybe that's just me, but I was stunned that McCaffrey was the one in that position.
Yeah, I think it comes down to hands. You really just want a guy with quick hands and some quickness, you know, body quickness. And Jordy Nelson used to do it for a long time. I think Donald Driver did it. You just want someone who's got really good hands, and they must have deemed him as that guy. Maybe Funchess was hurting, and they didn't go with him because he had gotten injured. I really don't know, but you know, really, I mean, the opposition, you know, the Panthers know who's best for that. And I don't think that guy plays like a rookie because he sure didn't look like a rookie the way he was controlling the game early on.
There were a number of key plays that came down to really close decisions or slim margins. You know, there was that touchdown in the back of the end zone where the wide receiver gets, as the broadcast, I know you didn't see it, but they called in Mike Pereira, the guy that they bring in, the rules expert, and he's talking about trying to see which cheek touched down first because he didn't want to say butt and he didn't want to say backside, you know. So it was just and that I think was a key moment in the game. And then obviously there were some people that thought the Allison catch and fumble should have been an incompletion. What was sort of the Packers' reaction to those two plays, if there was any?
McCarthy saw the play and the rule and thought the touchdown was a touchdown. I don't think he had a qualm with that. I don't recall if he was asked about the Geronimo Allison play, but that was clearly a catch. He clearly made a football move after that catch. He took a step, and The guy got a hand on it after that. I thought for sure that was a fumble. I didn't think it was even close.
No, I agree with you. And, you know, it, slim margins are going to decide these things. Just as the games in the NFC, the records are identical. We're going to fifth tiebreakers and things like that. And so now the Packers will try and regroup, and their season might mean something against Minnesota. It might not. Do you think that even if the season's over, is there going to be some sort of a unwritten motto or credo that the Minnesota game is going to be hugely important because that's the team that knocked Rodgers out and essentially ended their season?
Well, I think it'll be important to Rodgers. I don't know how it'll be for all the other guys. I'm sure they would like to beat the division champ, but, you know, and affect any home field advantage that they might have. But, you know, of the guys who really have motivation from the last game, I would say it's just Rodgers. I mean, I would expect if he does play that he will definitely have a chip on his shoulder, so to speak.
No question. I agree with you completely there. As somebody who's seen the NFC North for 2+ decades, what have you sort of made over the last, I don't know, maybe 5 to 8 years as the Lions have steadily improved under Stafford, the Vikings have turned it around under Zimmer, the Bears are obviously still struggling, but how have you seen the NFC North change in terms of competitiveness relative to the Packers and what the Packers are trying to accomplish?
Yeah, I would say that the division is much tougher. Everybody's got a quarterback now. I mean, Case Keenum is not a superstar, but he's a darn good quarterback. And everybody's got, you know, three of the teams have a franchise quarterback, and the other team has a good enough quarterback. So it's going to be very competitive, but the Packers still have the best quarterback. And as long as they have that, they have an advantage. And I think they'll still always be right there. Right at the top, but there's no more cakewalks to the division title, and you know they've got to improve defensively in order to compete. Chicago has a really good defense, Minnesota has a really good defense, and Detroit's defense isn't terrible, and so the Packers probably have the worst defense in the division, and that's got to change. They have to flip that. Somehow or another, they got to flip that.
So we'll spend tons of time in the future talking about things that they could do in the draft or positions of need. But, you know, I look at the wide receiver position, and as you talked about, aside from Adams, they don't have anybody that's winning right now. And so that, I think, is the only huge area of concern on offense. But like you said, on defense, I mean, Nick Perry was in and out of the game with injuries, and so the pass rush was inconsistent again, and the inside linebackers, you know, Martinez has been a tackle machine this season, but there still continue to be either communication mistakes or alignment mistakes. There's missed tackles every so often, and I don't know what they do at the back end of the defense, because they've gone from the last 2 years having 5 and 6 safeties on the roster to all of a sudden having one that's going to be a free agent in Burnett and another one in Clinton Dix, where they already picked up the option, and he seems to have either plateaued or maybe even regressed. And that doesn't even touch upon the corner position, where who knows when Quentin Rollins is going to be back and if he'll be effective. And Demarius Randle certainly is trending in the right direction, as was Kevin King. But boy, there is a lot of holes to fill on the defense, and I don't even know where you start.
Well, there is, but they've got a nucleus they can build around in King and Randle. And then, you know, I think Burnett will move on. I don't think they'll make a strong move to re-sign him, and Josh Jones will be that safety. Josh Jones is a rookie, you know, and Blake Martinez is in his second year, and those are guys that will get better. I mean, I think those are guys you can win with. It's just that you don't have enough of them, and they never seem to all mature at the same time. And so you never have, like Carolina, where their defensive front has grown up together, or at least you know, they've mostly grown up together. Other than Peppers is the only guy who was playing somewhere else, and he'll fit in anywhere. The Packers just don't do that because they're constantly bringing in young guys, and I don't know what they do. They've got some talent. They've got Kenny Clark. You know, Daniels is still a good player. Matthews can still be an effective player. Blake Martinez is going to be a good player. Will get better. I think Josh Jones will get better. I think Kelvin King will be a good player. I think Randall will be a good player. But they have to find out, they have to build depth, and then they have to find a scheme that those guys can excel at. Because right now, they're not. They're not, for whatever reason, they are not playing to their potential in that scheme. So something's wrong.
Yeah, that's the question I think that fans have been asking, you know, for the last couple of years when this defense seems to sort of tail off late in the season. What do you make about the idea that even if Capers wants to come back, that, you know, this, he's done this for so long, it's maybe just time for change? Or what do you think of the possibility that McCarthy will forcefully make a change, because year after year, it seems the inability of the defense to match whatever Rodgers is doing seems to doom them, you know, come postseason time.
Yeah, I think it's time for a change. I think they do need a change. I've always thought that Capers has gotten the short end of the stick by constantly having young guys in the secondary and never really having a mature secondary. Always having to fit in young guys and play with young guys, but that's part of the challenge, and it's part of every team's challenge. And they're not getting it done, and they don't seem to. Their young guys, you know, I wrote about this early in the year. They have individual guys playing well, and nobody playing together. And I think ultimately that's going to be. That's the undoing for Capers, is that you have talented guys who individually can make some really nice plays, but as a unit, they don't play together.
No, I think that's exactly hitting the nail on the head. And I also wonder, too, if just, you know, again, I have no doubt that Dom Capers has enough experience and enough knowledge of this league to put together schemes that work and find ways to be a decent defense. But like you said, I just wonder if the Packers are going to continue down this trend of essentially bolstering their defense with youth rather than trying to age it, as you talked about a couple minutes ago. I wonder if that is like you said, a factor that would force the Packers, or maybe not force the Packers, but encourage the Packers to find a defensive coordinator with a more simplistic scheme that lends itself more to youth. And so I don't know if that's somebody on the staff that they would want to bump up, if that's something McCarthy was interested in, or if they would go somewhere else from the outside. But I kind of agree with you. I just think that the fact that a number of these young players talk about, you know, the complexity of the defense or the number of packages and things like that, I just wonder if it needs to be simplified to a very, very low level because there's so many young guys.
Well, or it needs to be taught better. I mean, there might be some kind of disconnect there where they're not teaching the system in a consistent basis, where, you know, maybe there's guys who have different ways of doing it. I really don't know, because we don't get to see behind the scenes, but there just doesn't seem to be much connection between the safeties and corners. The linebackers don't seem to drop in the right places. I don't know why that occurs. If it's misunderstanding of the scheme, if it's that they don't draft players who are aware, I really don't know. But for whatever reason, Capers and his staff can't seem to overcome it. And whether that's their fault, I don't really know for sure, but I think at some point, you know, you're getting diminishing returns and it's not getting better. And So I do think it's time for a change.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you there. And so that'll be obviously a storyline to follow into the off season. Is there anything else from the Carolina game that you want to touch on before we wrap this up?
No, just I'm trying to think if there is anything else. It turned into a pretty good game. It really was. I thought it was heading for a blowout. And, you know, if the Packers had taken that third to overtime for a third straight week, it would have been really interesting. But, you know, the better team won, the team with more talent. And we're finding that there's a lot of teams in the NFL that have more talent than the Packers do now. And that's not a good thing. Maybe having a mid-round draft pick, you know, or picking from the mid-round with, you know, four compensatory picks or whatever is actually what they're going to need to get themselves going again. Either that or they're going to have to be active in free agency. So, let's see.
Yeah, it's a good point because I think that, you know, the fact that Ted Thompson did dip into free agency a little this past year showed at least to people that cover the team more boldness than what he'd showed recently, but some of it backfired with, you know, the Martellus Bennett fiasco and everything that came with that. And Lance Kendricks has been okay at best this season, but I do think they've gotten a decent amount of quality reps out of Ahmad Brooks for a 33-year-old, and I think Quentin Dial is a guy that when you're talking about depth, he is a good guy to have for depth. So I don't know if Ted will continue to pursue the free agent market, but I personally, if it was me, that's sort of the way I would go because I think there are some guys to be had there.
Yeah, no question about it. I think you have to continue to do that. And I think this whole thing about that you're not having your young guys get experience is part of the deal. And they have to get their experience through practice. And I'll remember Mike Tomlin talking about this on the conference call when I asked him about, you know, bringing in the Joe Haydens and Tony Jefferson and some of the other guys, that corner, one of the aging corners they have. You know, why do you do that? And he said competition. It gives the young guy, forces the young guy to compete, you know, and to know his stuff. And it raises the level of play of everybody around it when you've got experienced guys. And the Packers just don't have that. And that's something I think they need to continue to do.
So there you have it. Plenty of things to consider as the offseason likely looms for the Packers. Again, there is a very slim chance that they make it into the playoffs. A number of things need to happen, and all of that could be silenced later today, Monday night, when the Falcons play the Buccaneers. If the Falcons win, it's over and the Packers are officially eliminated. If the Falcons lose, there is still a glimmer of hope, but it's unlikely that the Packers will snag the sixth wild card. So be sure to check out PackersNews.com and JSOnline.com for all of the coverage throughout the week as the Packers get ready to host the Minnesota Vikings. We thank you guys very much for listening, and we will talk to you soon.